Welcome to the Lead Like a Woman show, where we feature top women leaders who share their inspirational stories on life and leadership. Let's go.
Andrea Houston here. I am the hostess of the Lead Like a Woman show, where I feature strong, amazing, brilliant female leaders and how they're changing our world for the better. We have over 40,000 people on social media who are sharing our message of empowering female leaders to empower others. If you enjoy this show, I'd love it if you could share with one other person. We chart every week all over the world. Last week, we were in Belgium. Who's listening to us in Belgium? Thank you. Merci. Danke. Whatever. Oh, Dutch. Never mind. Merci. We'll go with that. But keep sharing, everyone. Our goal is to chart in the US and Canada this year. We've never done it. So there's my goal. So in this episode, we're going to get creative about creative entrepreneurship. But before we get to that, you know this episode is brought to you by one of my companies. It's Artitudes today. Are you a woman who wants to start a business or do you already own one? Artitudes has a special offer for you. Learn to pitch for funding and for sales with our women-owned package. It includes content and speaker coaching and a pitch or sales presentation so that you can win with confidence. You can find it at artitudes.com/women-owned, not woman-owned. This is collective. It's women-owned. And the best way to find me, just type hashtag lead like a woman into your search bar. And for some magical reason, I pop up. Also, I'm always on LinkedIn. This week's shout out is to Borealis Base Camp, 25 miles outside of Fairbanks, Alaska. I just returned from a retreat there with other entrepreneurs this past week, and it was amazing. We snowshoed, we walked reindeer. That was really fun. Their names were Dwight and Alice, like Borealis. We also went snowmobiling, dog sledding, and we saw the Aurora Borealis. Check them out at www.borealisbasecamp.net. All right, today we're going to have some fun because I think we're going to be crazy. My guest today is Marlee Major. She's the CEO of The Party Goddess, a nationally acclaimed full-service event planning and catering company. From understated elegance to rock star fabulous, Major is known for creating the most talked about parties of the year for a client list ranging from top tier businesses to A-list celebrities such as Snoop Dogg, Sofia Vergara, and Britney Spears. As the profit goddess, Marlee's also establishing herself as one of the best resources for small business owners and entrepreneurs out there. She's a top business coach in LA and the author of But Are You Making Any Money? A witty and lauded business guide praised by Forbes as a great how-to book for any entrepreneur. Major is the party planning and entrepreneurial expert people turn to for all things entertaining. Marlee, welcome to the Lead Like a Woman show.
Thank you for having me. I'd love to lead like a woman like you.
Me too. Like you. Like you.
God, I like the group when you said the whole like women instead of woman. It's got to be a collective, I think.
Damn right. Maybe I should change this to the Lead Like Women show. Right. Nah, I like Lead Like a Woman. But it's only because I like alliteration.
Yes. Yes. No, I get it. I'm with you.
So you started The Party Goddess almost 25 years ago now.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me.
I know, right? Got to remind ourselves of our age sometimes. But you know what? Mm-hmm. It's like wine. When we age, we're better, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go with that for now.
I think you're exactly right. As long as you take care of the bottle of wine and don't store it in the sun and all those other things, so we can say that. But there's a lot of truth to that because one thing you can't do is you can't accelerate the time that it takes wine to age, or at least at the time of this taping, they really haven't figured out how to do it. And the same goes for being in business a long time and, kind of listening to some of your other podcasts about grit and which have been fabulous. Thanks. You just sort of have to stay in the game and keep showing up and keep at it. And if you do and keep working to be better as opposed to just working to stay in business, I think that's where the magic kind of happens. So
I think it's important. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And you know what? I don't want to be any age other than what I am, because right. I've learned a hell of a lot.
Right. And if we reverse, then it isn't like we just get to pick and choose, no. Right? We'd have to do the whole thing over again. And those are the parts that no. I'm like, oh, yeah, now I'm good. I think I'm
there
good.
Are some good things, but no to the rest. No.
Right.
And you know, I have a mom who is always, oh, it's my 50th anniversary of my 29th birthday. I'm like, oh, shut up. Because sorry, mom. But you know what? If you're not having birthdays, you're dead. So I'm celebrating every damn day and every damn year. I think it's important.
Well, lately people have been saying like, how are you? And sometimes if you're having a bad day, which I don't like to be like, it's a, you know, blanking day. But so I changed it to, you know, I'm on the right side of the grass.
That's right. I'm above ground. Like, that's what I say. Yeah, I'm above ground.
Right. Sometimes, you know, that's what you got. So I'm going to leave with that.
Absolutely. I think it's important. So Marley, when you started the Party Goddess, I want to know what made you step out on your own. What was the impetus there?
Well, the thing is that at the end of the day, I've always been on my own, really. I think, you know, I mean, we can get into the whole entrepreneurship, born or bred deal, but I believe for most entrepreneurs, it really is kind of at birth. I mean, I certainly think you can develop it, but I mean, I started my first business literally when I was 4 years old, selling shrinking dinks door to door.
I love it.
And genuinely like selling them, I would not give them away for free. I had my little target audience neighbors that I was after. And so for me, it's always been like, I've just had this burning drive and there has never been anything that has gotten in my way. Many things I've tried, but it's just always been like, this is what I'm going to do. Why would I work for anybody else? Now that has pros and cons too. Believe me, there are many times I thought, listen, I would have done so much better if I had worked for a big company and learned the proper way to do things, right? Because sometimes as an entrepreneur, you just jerry-rig.
You have to. You just figure it out.
Right. You figure it out. And that develops some really great muscles and it develops some really great grit and it develops some experience that you can't give away, but there is something to be said for kind of like, what is the quote right way to do it. But I started, before I started the Party Goddess, I was in the restaurant business, I went to Georgetown, got my business degree, did something very un-Georgetown like at the time, which was got into the restaurant business because I married a chef. And then from there, we took over a banquet operation and a catering company. And then we kept getting these offers to partner up for the restaurant. And my dad, who was our partner at the time, was like, why don't you just do this? You know, and he's like, what you love is the parties. And I was just like, because in those days, this was like, say, 2000. I mean, you didn't have these days, everybody's a party planner, right? But in those days, you either had people who were a wedding planner, like for a huge wedding, or were corporate planners for like a giant conference. You didn't have like a random, you didn't have somebody who would just come and like do your holiday party start to finish with entertainment. It was very, you know, like, oh, we'll do your food. Oh, we'll do your flowers. Oh, and so I thought
separate buckets.
Exactly. And I was like, why not put it all under an umbrella, kind of like the business model of like what the giant corporate planners did. And then, So I hung my shingle out as the Party Goddess, being like, yes, I do lighting, I do all these things, which I had done, but it opened things up because it still to this day, there are no barriers to entry in the event planning world, which is great, good and bad, because you know, you can just basically steal everybody's pictures on Pinterest and put them on your website and say like, oh, I'm an amazing event planner.
That's horrifying.
Right. But I started then and I'm still, you know, there many times when I was like, oh, I should have a partner, it'd be so much easier and better. And then there's something I always say to my friends, which is like, have we met? And then I say to myself, like, have we met? Because there's no way. I like to forge it on my own and skin my knees on my own. And, you know, you always have a team no matter what, but I think I'm the best horse to bet on every time. So
I love it. I think it's incredible. So I'm going to rewind that you started selling shrinky dinks door to door at the age of four. For those millennials and Gen Zs out there who don't know what a shrinky dink is, I used to do these too, but create almost anything, right?
Yeah. So it was basically, it was a piece of, it was a way I could not burn the house down. And You would do, it's like a piece of plastic that you would basically draw on with a Sharpie, right?
Yep.
And then you put the plastic in the toaster oven. And yep. then you'd watch it, you know, and for me, that was just
shrink.
Magic. Watching, it was just like, wait, what? You'd shrink before your eyes. So you take this great big thing that was like kind of the 8.5 by 11 piece of plastic. And then, you know, you do a couple things on it and it would shrink way down. Well, then I'd pop a hole in it while it was still hot with my, yep. you know, little 4-year-old paws. And then put a string through it. And then it was like, oh yeah, it's a necklace. It's whatever you want it to be. But I just thought the whole process was magic, starting with let's watch this thing shrink right down to, I mean, I can literally remember seeing the nickel and the quarter like in my hand.
Oh,
I sold it. And being like, this is the greatest feeling on earth. And it you know, when you have when that's what lights you up, you know, that still is what lights me up. It's kind of like the thrill of the chase. And then
you're a natural entrepreneur. Absolutely, yeah. A natural entrepreneur, because then you went on to create a doll repair business. I love it. It's in quotes, just so you know. I did air quotes, listeners.
Yes.
Then you sold plums out of the backyard. I'm guessing they weren't your plums to sell, maybe mom and dad's, but you still sold them.
I was like, listen, this is a product. We're not eating all these plums. Like, other people are going to want them. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, I would have sold or done anything. Just because for me, it was the, let's hang out my shingle or let's put out my sign and say, this is for sale. And then see what happens. It was always to me like going fishing. Like, you put the line in the water, you never know what you're going to get. And
true.
I just loved it and thrived on it. And I think at the end of the day, when people talk about like serial entrepreneurs, or they talk about like the Mark Cubans of the world, or the people who have this business, then they have that kind of company. And you start to see, as you get older, you really realize how that's possible, because business is pretty much widgets. You know, you've got the customer service component and the unique selling proposition component and the marketing component. And at the end of the day, it's just a kind of a package that you just move from type of business to type of business.
Right. Because there's so many different things you can do and sell and be. Right. And to that end, I mean, you're not only the party goddess, you're also the profit goddess.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your small business coaching.
Well, what happened to me is what happens to a lot of entrepreneurs is that I, you know, even though I got my business degree from Georgetown, and even though, you know, I spent, you know, all my time, like how to read a profit and loss statement and a balance sheet, and all that stuff, I couldn't seem to apply what I needed to apply in my own business. And so what happened was, I was, when I was in the restaurant business, I was totally focused on sales, right? And I was like, I'm going to do $1 million my first year. Well, that's great, but you can't then spend $1.1 million and call yourself a success. Now, you can in the sense that you accomplished the goal, but I just had such a difficult time setting the goal and then realizing what were the steps that had to go into it, that all along during the year, you're making money like on every single project, and how to dissect your overhead and how to...
Right.
So I, for my industry convention, this was a million years ago, if you taught a class, you could get a free pass to the convention. And that was very valuable. So I was like,
right.
Yep, dude, I'm teaching me a class. And, you know, and by then I had created this system where I just taken my expenses and I divided them into four buckets, A, B, C, and D. And I was like, okay, this is cost of goods sold, and this is time, and this is your forget-me-nots, and this is your overhead. And I had the system was great. I applied what?
Forget me nots. Sorry to interrupt.
Forget me nots, because those are what kills you every time.
Ah.
I taught my class, and there was like standing room only, and the class was supposed to be an hour, and then I was going to go have drinks, and everybody's at like, and I was just like, did you not hear the beginning part of this story where I talked about my train wreck like beginnings? Like, did you? They're like, yeah. But anyway, it was so fascinating to me, because then I kept saying, then why are you asking me? Like, I'm not the financial. Yeah. In fact, I just told you I'm horrendous at this. And they were, and I just remember it resonated so much with me, is that somebody said, but you're the only one answering our questions.
Oh.
And I just remember thinking, like, what is that about? Because I had experienced that, right? When I went from the restaurant business to event planning,
yeah.
I would say, how do you price? Like, Do you charge a markup? Do you charge hourly? Do you track your time? And I could never really get a straight answer from people. Well, what I realized is I couldn't get a straight answer from people because they didn't really have a plan with how they did it. It wasn't so much they didn't want to tell me. They didn't want to tell me. But so then I thought, what is wrong with this? And then they were like, well, how can we follow up? Like, do you have a book? And I was like, a book? Like, what am I going to say? Hi, I'm horrible at this, but follow me.
I love you said yes, and then you wrote it because that's how
And then I just wrote it and I was like, okay, fine. It was basically something like, yeah, great, here's the follow-up. But that really started the profit goddess. And what ended up happening was so many people had the same problems I did.
Oh yeah.
And especially women. And what I found was so interesting is so many of them would become lawyers or, you know, doctors or have a second career. And they'd say, listen, I don't want to do corporate America anymore. I want to go off and start my own, whatever it is, shrinky dink business. And they would do that. And they would, these women, I mean, their IQs would wrap me in circles, yet they would get stuck at the same spot, which
absolutely.
Was how do I price? How do I know what to start? How do I charge what I'm worth? I was making so much more in corporate America. I thought I'd make more as an entrepreneur. Why am I not? You know, like all these things. And so I would just answer the question and tell them where I thought they were going wrong. And at the end of the day, it boiled down to they didn't have a system to price. And yes, you need the unique selling proposition and all these things, but you have to have a plan for this is, let's say I plan parties. I spend X amount of time approximately talking to the client in the beginning. Then I spend X amount of time creating the proposal. Then I spend X amount. So I have to build all of that in, right, to my pricing in the first place. And so once I really broke it down so granularly, and I realized that as long as I repeat this process, and as long as I take these things into consideration in chunks,
right,
the end result will be a profitable event. And if I have one profitable event and I do 50 events in a year and each one is profitable, then I'm going to be profitable. The challenge for me.
The basics.
Yes. But the challenge for me, it was like, and I have a chapter in my book that's called Deconstructing the Pot of Soup. Because to me, that's what it felt like. It felt like everything was just this big, like, here are your sales at the end of the year, and here are your expenses, and here's how much you made or didn't make, but you didn't know why or how to pull it apart or how to, well, what went wrong or which job was it that messed it up? And so I had to just go, and I do this exercise in my book where I talk about just pick three, you know, quote, events or three projects or three clients that are very similar to whatever it is you do, you know, and write down all the steps to that process and then figure out where, how much each step costs, including your time and including your massage oil if you're a masseuse or whatever it is.
Exactly.
And then you start building from there. Yep. And if you can start building from there, and it's like everything is the sum of its parts. So if, as I said, if one event or one client is profitable and you just keep repeating that, you have a profitable, have a profitable business. But we start as entrepreneurs and we get so focused on social media and what this one is doing and that one is doing. And, and look at my jeans are from 7 and my this
oh,
is
geez.
And we forget about all that. What it is about is, are you making any money?
Exactly.
And by the way, you don't have to make money, but then you are a nonprofit.
That's right.
It is a hobby. That is it's a totally different pursuit, which is no problem.
I've said to my team before, we're not a nonprofit.
Right.
Not a nonprofit. We have to charge. So I want to backpedal just a touch because we didn't tell everybody the title of your book. We were talking about Profit Goddess. The title of your book is, but are you making any money? Stop being busy and start creating cash. I love that.
Well, that came because my dad is an amazing entrepreneur. And
oh, cool.
He would always say to me, I would always talk about the, you know, in these days, the days before you had all the social media, but it was the equivalent of, and then I have Britney Spears as a client. And then I just did the Hollywood opening of the Hollywood Bowl. And then we just did, and he was like, I don't care. You know, I don't care about anything.
But are you making any money?
But are you making any money?
Right.
And I would always hesitate. And he'd be like, it's a very simple question. And It was a very simple question, but I couldn't answer it. And that made me just sick to my stomach. And and I was like, I have been here before. I do not ever want to be here again. I do not ever, ever, ever want to be able to say, or to not know if I'm making any money, how much I'm making, what my percentage of profit is.
Right.
I needed to know those numbers because then you have confidence, right?
Yeah, and
then
absolutely.
When you have confidence, you build on that. So I ended up titling the book, But Are You Making Any Money? Because at the end of the day, that's the difference between what we talked about before, a hobby and a nonprofit. And then it's once you are like, but are you making any money? And the answer is yes, even if it's 10 cents, then kind of the question is, but how much more do you want to make? Right.
Absolutely.
And let me help you get there. But first you got to identify what is the root of the issue. You know, what do you fix in your business?
And how do you move forward from there? You have something on your website, The Profit Goddess, that says double or triple your rates.
So what I mean by that is when I would coach people, right, I would always say, you know, people would always say, well, I want to raise my rates. I want to chart. And it would always be like, well, what does that mean? I want to raise my rate. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that's like you're flying from LA to New York and the ticket's $500. You just want to raise it to $700. But what is that based on? Like, what does that mean? And so I came up with this way that universally, no matter what country or continent or means of financial exchange you use, everybody could understand one thing, which was basically like an hourly rate or a price to do the job, right? So if I said to you, hey, listen, I'm going to hire a housekeeper to clean my house, and let's pretend it's going to cost me $20 an hour, okay? Or just for purposes of discussion. And it's going to take 4 hours. That's $80. Okay. So let's say it's going to take 5 hours. So it's $100, nice round number. So it's going to cost $100 to get this job done. And so what I would say to people is they would say, well, I do my own bookkeeping or I do my own this or that. And I would say, okay, how much is it going to cost you to hire somebody to file or do this with your computer? Okay. Let's say $20 now. And then I started boiling it down and I would say, well, if you weren't doing that, you could pay somebody $20 an hour. And I'm not talking about the high level stuff like doing a podcast or something that is really your secret sauce.
Right.
But if you could hire that out for $20 an hour, and then you yourself could write, you know, email newsletters, or you could do a podcast, or you could do this or that, that acts as a marketing tool.
Right.
How many clients could you call, you know, 5 hours, or how many? That's a tremendous amount.
And so it is.
How I would say double your rates is substitute the three lowest activities that you do with the three highest activities that you do. And there's a little exercise about figuring out what that is.
Ooh.
And even if you just start there, it is so easy to double your rates because there are ways you can charge more. That's one way to double your rate. But another way to double your rate is just to work half the time. And guess what?
Yeah, that's true.
And people often don't look at it that way.
No, they don't.
But it's like, if you can just supersize your efficiency, I'm not saying that's totally the answer, but it's a great place to start. Or
absolutely.
To see what can you automate or what expenses can you cut?
Yeah.
And when you start looking at it kind of from more of a 360 degree perspective, it really changes how you work on your business. And so that's why I talk about doubling your rates, because everybody wants to charge more, no matter what it is. If you're a cereal company or you're a bookkeeping company, or everybody wants to charge more.
Well, and you mentioned a cereal company. So let me take that for just a second. Sure. Have you noticed, everybody who's listening and Marley, how boxes of cereal have gotten smaller over the years and the price has gone up?
Yes.
Not incrementally, incrementally. But what I mean is they haven't doubled the price of the cereal on the boxes, but what they've done is they've made a shit ton more money because there's less cereal in those boxes.
Right. And the box is less, you know, they don't have to make as big a box. So the box is slightly cheaper and there's slightly less ink and the, you know, bag inside the box. Yep. And then you go to the cereal in the box. So it's, you've brought up a really great point. which is, and when you meant, when we were talking about forget-me-nots before, it's, yes, it is the cost of goods sold, which is the cereal in the box. Right. And, you know, the box is the cost of goods sold too, but
absolutely.
But where we forget is all these little things that when you cut something and
yeah,
how you start, you know, because profit is basically the money between the wallpaper and the wall, right?
And yes.
Our margins these days are very thin for
most
things. So you kind of just have to keep expanding that space between the wallpaper and
wall. Yeah.
And it there are a lot of ways to do it, but you're right. Instead of just saying Kellogg's is now going to be $9.99 for this box, if everybody'd freak out.
Exactly.
But if the box is just a little bit smaller, well, what are you going to do? There isn't a bigger box.
Right. And a lot of people aren't going to notice right away.
Exactly.
And so they're making more money. They're doubling or tripling.
Correct. And so you have to look at it. You have to look at it. Or business to me is all about there are many ways to skin a cat. Right.
Yes. And that's so creative too.
The first one is not to just say my ticket from LA to New York is now went from $500 to $1,000. No, maybe you say my ticket from LA to New York stays at 500, but then I talk in the early days, then airline said, fine, well, we can't up that. Same thing with the cereal.
We'll charge you for your
baggage fees.
And then
we'll
food.
Charge seat fees. And then we'll charge for food. And
that's
then
right.
We'll charge for, so it's like cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
So they're making more money.
You're making more money, but guess what? They didn't technically raise their prices. So in the book, I call it raising your prices without actually raising your prices.
Yeah, exactly.
Put more into the pot, but the consumer still feels like, okay, I'm getting the same thing I was getting before.
Exactly. And you're not. That's the thing. It's really, really fascinating.
Yep.
But there's so many things you can do creatively.
Yes.
That can get you more money.
There are. And there are even basic things like, you know, you can do a whole deep dive into neuroeconomics and jumping into that, which is just how you position things on your website and how people are going to choose, or you position things, you know, on a menu. And if sometimes you'll see, you know, on menus, the ones that are done properly have real disparity with some of the higher price items.
Because absolutely.
There is a certain percentage of the population that no matter how expensive it is, they just want to be that person that orders that item on that menu.
They do, yeah.
Right? It doesn't mean that that is the best, most expensive item.
No.
It means,
in fact, oftentimes it's not.
Oftentimes it's not. But what it means is they're getting a certain percentage. And guess what? That is giving them a lot more revenue. And it is merely because they had the disparity of prices on their menus.
Yeah.
Or you can also do it with how you write the pricing, you know, on your proposals, like the longer the number looks, like, you know, 1700, you know, 0.55, like your brain perceives it as more expensive than if you just put like 17K for 17,000.
Right. And
so when you dig into it, you're certainly not working anymore. You're saving a little bit of ink on the paper, but at the end of the day, you're making more for doing practically nothing, but
it's
using
true,
your
market,
the outside.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you wrote this book, you started The Profit Goddess, you have these classes, you're still creating events for Britney Spears and Snoop Dogg and anyone else who asks you, how in the world are you finding the time to coach, to help other people as well?
Well, it satisfies a different need, right?
Yeah.
So there's it's a different need, and then it's kind of the same need in some ways. Like if you're a really good party planner, at the end of the day, you just want to see the client happy and that transformation and have them, oh my gosh, they accomplished all whatever it was that they wanted to at this event. And then, and so you do it for the kind of the accolades, but so that they also feel good. But coaching is, it's kind of like feeds your soul, right? Because
it does.
I put myself back in the place where I was that person who had so many questions and no one to turn to. And every time I asked the question, I felt stupid by asking it, or felt stupid with the answer I got, like, how do you not know this? You know, then I was just like, I'm just going to make sure that as many people as possible don't make those mistakes, because they're totally unnecessary. They right. don't need to make the mistake. And so for me, it yeah. satisfies me on a different level. So you make time for
what feeds your soul.
Yeah, you right. have to keep pivoting, and that's a choice I made.
So speaking of feeding your soul, yes. this is going to come from out the left field, listeners. But Marley, I want to know if yes. it's more difficult to make a cheese or a chocolate souffle.
That's a great left field question.
I'll explain why in a minute.
Okay. I'm going to say it is slightly more difficult to make a cheese souffle than a chocolate souffle.
Tell us why.
Well, because if you have a cheese souffle, you know, cheese is just heavier. Just think of it purely from the apples to apples perspective. Cheese is slightly heavier than chocolate is. Okay. Not than chocolate itself, but like, let's say chocolate, whatever you could mix in and you could whip it up. Okay. So to me, the chocolate would be slightly easier and more forgiving just because of gravity. And because it could be, you know, could be slightly simpler.
Yeah.
But if you have the basic principles down of what you're doing, either can be, you know, easy to make with a little bit of practice.
Then I want to know, do you still make souffles?
I do. That's funny you say that. I haven't made one in a long time, but I still do make them.
Oh.
And here's the thing is that I can make them in my sleep now. Like to
wow. some people, well, you were the souffle girl.
I was the souffle girl. Yes. for a very long time. And that's one of those things is just like business experience or anything else where you just start, you know, as you're mixing it, you start knowing, okay, this is a consistency that's good. But then when you put it in the oven, right. you really know, wait, this is going too fast, you know, or it's about right. Pull it, even though it seems somebody else might think, oh, it's not quite done yet. You're like, yes, now pull it out. So, I think those things are important too, to really reconnect with why you started the whole process in the first place. You know, that's why I got into business was I love food.
Well, and that's the connection I really wanted to showcase is that you had, after your sophomore year of college, you went to cooking school in France.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was before my junior year, and I was like, I don't have anything particular that I want to do for that summer. And I was like, okay, how am I going to sell this to my parents? And then I was like, okay. I'd taken French in high school. So I was like, okay, I'll have a French tutor. I'll go to Paris. I'll take cooking. So I had a stacked schedule. I mean, it was a real schedule. I was busy 5 days a week, but I figured I'd be excited. I'd be interested. And then, you know, I went to cooking school and learned how to cook, and that was great. And then I came back, and then for one of my classes, that's how I got into the restaurant business. Yeah. I interviewed a chef for one of my classes. And that's a whole very long story. But then, you know, when I interviewed him, I decided I needed to marry him. And since I decided I needed to marry him, I was like, well, how am I going to even see him again? Because he works in the bowels of this kitchen. And then, you know, so I was like, okay, back to the souffle thing. I'm this amazing souffle chef. And I speak Spanish fluently, which at the time wasn't 100% true.
Ooh.
And I ended up getting a job there.
But why Spanish?
Because the kid, he did not speak Spanish and he's very broken Spanish. And a lot of the kitchen staff,
they
spoke Spanish.
Hispanic, yeah.
And so I put on my sales hat at that point, and I was like, you know, at the end of the day, how am I going to make this guy's life easier? That is the only reason I'm going to get a job, because he didn't have any positions available, right. certainly for somebody like me. And I was just like, but I thought, wow, if I can just be the translator girl, or I can just deal with these souffles that are pain in the neck on this menu, then I've got a shot. It will end up getting the job. And
amazing.
Yeah.
Marrying him.
I did end up marrying him, yes. After another summer of cooking school in Normandy. And, you know,
wow.
On and on. Yeah. 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 But it, you know, but that's what I loved in the beginning. And I think when you genuinely start with what you love.
Yes.
And then I call it corridor thinking, right? Like I didn't go to cooking school, so I can be in the restaurant business. No. I went to cooking school because I had
because you love to cook.
And a passion, exactly.
Right.
And then somewhere along going down that hallway, you realize, oh, okay. Then there's this door and that door and this door. And then that starts to create your career. And I think as long as you keep your ultimate goals in mind, you know, which are yes, to be doing something satisfying, but for a lot of people in business, it's to make money. And then it becomes how much money? And then it becomes, well, how much do you want to work?
Yeah,
and
then absolutely.
It all kind of gets carved. It all kind of gets carved from there. But I think at the end of the day, it boils down to Michael Gerber's whole thing, which is you've got to work on your business, not just in
your business. And absolutely.
Yours truly. I mean, yours included. Always forget that. We think, oh, now I've been in business 25 years. Now I've been in business this long. Yeah. I don't have to work on my business. Somebody
but you
else
do.
Do. It's just like you were saying when you said you went off to Alaska and I'm sure you were marinating about your business while
absolutely.
You were there. You can't shut it off. And you have to take that time to step away and say, wait a second.
You do.
Who are the clients that I like working with the best? Who are the ones I like working with the least? Which are the most profitable? Where did those clients come from? Did they come from Instagram? Did they come from? And then how do you replicate that process? And that is what being good in business is about. And that's how I keep getting better and better. And you go to Stephen Covey sharpening the saw. Like it's these kind of tried and true habits that keep getting you to the next level.
Yeah, you have to. So it's really fascinating because a lot of people don't understand that. They don't understand that you have to look, you have to spend the time, not just doing what your business does, because other people can do that too.
And other people will, as soon as you have a certain amount of success. And you know, in the old days, you could kind of keep your success on the down low, right? But these days, everybody's
not
so busy flaunting it on social media. So if it is flaunted on social media, whether it's a good idea or not, somebody's going to try to copy it. But it kind of goes back to like when they say used to say about like, oh, they didn't change with the times or they didn't. To me, that's just an old fashioned way of saying they didn't work on their business instead of in it. Because when you work on it, you realize, wow, I'm not getting as many of these customers as I was getting before.
Right.
Why? Is it competition? Is it because I'm cutting my advertising budget? Is it where? But those are questions you cannot answer while you're sitting at your desk.
No, you can't.
Typing proposals.
Right.
You have to, like for me, go outside and, you know, take a good hike. And
me too.
And then come
back.
That's
where I get my best ideas.
Yeah. Like the aha. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so that would be a great piece of advice you would give somebody else is you really have to spend the time to work on your business, not in your business. But I want to know, you probably had people who mentored you as well because you're a coach. Yeah. So what is the best piece of advice you've been given over the years that still resonates to this day?
I would say, you know, how my dad would say it to me, which is like, you know, stay in your lane or put your head down and work. And basically what that means is don't worry about what everybody else is doing, you know, and these days it would translate to don't worry about what so-and-so is doing on Instagram or TikTok or come up with your business plan, what makes you unique.
That's right.
You just keep focusing on that. Don't try to emulate somebody else's business. Don't try to, you can emulate the business model and do what works, but just keep your head down and work. Yep. And then when it's something stalls out or you know, a pandemic hits or you lose your biggest customer, because it will happen.
It will happen.
You just put your head down and you just work harder. It's like when you don't feel like it is often the time when you have to just work
absolutely.
Hard. And that is just it. That's how it goes. There is no free lunch. There's no other way to do it. You just put your head down and work. And
you
then
just have to. Yeah.
One day you put your head up and you go, oh, wow. Okay. I didn't have trouble making my mortgage this month, you know?
No, yay.
Progress.
Good right? news, right? Yeah. Oh my gosh, Miley, you're so much fun. So, you know, I want to know, because I believe that every woman has one. Marley, what is your superpower?
I think it's probably taking chaos and creating structure and calm, but I'm going to go to one more thing, which is even like confidence. So I can take whether it's a very complicated business concept and boil it down and say, listen, it's not that complicated. Here's all the literature, all the this studied, this at Wharton and this, and here's the bottom line. Do this, do this, do this. Then I can reassure the person and then I can fluff up their wings, right?
That's the confidence part.
Right? Because here's the thing. It's not just solve. Like, a lot of people can solve the problem. But sometimes, you know, it's like you go to a doctor and they solve the problem and they yank your, you know, you go to the dentist, they yank your tooth and you're like, oh my God, okay, yeah, I guess the tooth is out, but I am dying right now.
Yeah, it's hurts.
Right? You got to get them and set them on their way. And that's a little bit, you know, that translates to parties too, right? Somebody comes to them, whether they're overwhelmed, they don't, you know, maybe they had a bad experience. They don't know where to start. They're just totally swimming. And my job is to say, whoa. Okay. What is it that you want? Like, what's the goal? Right. How much? What's the date? Let me figure it out. And then let me be like, okay, you're not going to hear from me for a couple of days. I'm going to go put this together. And then we're going to go from there so that they feel like, God, now I'm back in control.
Yeah. Right? And you know, you start with the end in mind.
Yes. You have to with everything.
Wow. Awesome. So one other fun fact I want to share with our listeners, Marley's last name is Major, but it's M-A-J-C-H-E-R, and it's derived from the Polish word that means judge. So it was thus likely that this last name was given to those who held positions of power and authority in Polish courts. Yeah. Really, really fascinating. But I think it also speaks to who you are. Not that you're a judge, but you are this... You know, me too. But you're this incredibly dynamic woman who has a lot to share with other people. So we've had such a fabulous conversation with you today. Oh my God.
Thank you.
We could talk all day.
Of course we could. Yes. Well, thank you for providing this platform for me and for your listeners to just keep, you know, learning and paying attention. And this counts as working on your business.
It
you know,
does, like, doesn't
sometimes
it?
We yeah. think of it as, oh, this was entertaining, or it was, quote, just a podcast.
Oh.
But no, if you listen to these podcasts and
ideas.
Then, you know, you just say, listen, what's one thing that I can take from that Lead Like a Woman podcast? And then what's one thing I can take? You know, you could fill a notebook.
You could.
And but it's just about saying, what's the one takeaway that I
absolutely.
Could do to improve? And then you just
I called it my golden nugget. What's the golden nugget I got today? So we got a lot of golden nuggets from you, Marley Major, the party goddess and the profit goddess. So Marley, where can listeners find you online?
So I am really working on my Instagram channel. So I would love it if they want the party stuff, they can go to the party goddess. And if they want the business stuff, they just go to the profit goddess.
Nice.
And then they can find out everything about, like, you know, the book and all that stuff is on Amazon. But I think Instagram is a great place to start and kind of get to know the person that you're starting to follow.
Okay. I love that. So we'll put those links into the show notes as well, so we can find you on Instagram.
Thank you.
Marley, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
What a fabulous conversation. And listeners, I want you to remember that we all have superpowers. Marley can create structure and calm out of chaos, but she can also fluff up your wings.
Like, you've got this.
You've got it. Listeners, I have superpowers, and really, you have superpowers. So please use them for good. And thank you for listening today to the Lead Like a Woman show, where we are passionate about empowering women leaders to empower others. Now go fluff up somebody's wings.
Thank you for listening to the Lead Like a Woman show. We look forward to seeing you next time. Make sure to subscribe to get future episodes.